From the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world, from wherever the beautiful game is played, this is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Well, hello everyone and welcome back to the Man City Pod. We have an action-packed pod for you today. It has been a little while since the three of us have managed to get together, so we have plenty to cover. Six games in total to be exact, so we will crack on with the most recent events. Hello, Pauls.
How are we? Good to be back.
Good to be back. Paul Digg, if I understand, you're joining us from the slopes?
I am. I'm in Austria at the minute, looking out to lovely white snow.
God, lovely.
And I might have a little glue vein later on just to warm myself up.
Sounds like a plan. And Paul Serres, how are we?
Yes, not too bad, thanks. Not too bad. Just getting over the events of the Wigan game, which was it's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, only really City can do that to you, where you're absolutely positive that you're going to lose, and then when you do, it's a bit of a shock, to be honest.
Yes. But these days, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It keeps it interesting, and I know we're going to talk more in depth about it, but maybe it's maybe ahead of the cup final at the weekend and a second leg. I know it's a formality really against Basel.
Yeah,
maybe it's a little wake up for City, because I don't think we were great last night.
No, potentially so. And we did have a little discussion before we started to record, Paul Serres, around the Delphins, the red card, the yellow card, Anthony Taylor, etc. Paul Digg, would love to hear your thoughts. First of all, as Paul Serres just mentioned, on the performance and on the key incident, which obviously was the red card just before half time, when Fabian Delph, the tackle that was deemed to be a sending off offence.
Yeah, I'll try and keep it as short as I can, because we could probably do a whole pod in my opinions on last night.
We could.
Yeah, I think the performance wasn't up to where we've been, but it was still good enough to win the game. If you look at the second half with 10 men, I think there was still 82% of possession.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't matter what level you're playing against. You know, Wigan have been flying high in League One. I think it's quite ironic that the opposition's best performance against City for a majority of the season have been from Championship and League One clubs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they go out there in the cup games, they've got no fear whatsoever.
That's it.
And they can go and have a right good go, because everybody's expecting them to get beat. Give Wigan credit, I thought they defended really well, but we put our chances away, especially in the first half. We go on to win 3 or 4-0 on the sending off. I don't think it was. Loads of people have their own opinions, whether it was a sending off, whether it was reckless, whether it was studs up, whether it was a yellow, whether it was a red. The biggest thing for me is how Anthony Taylor can change his mind like that.
Mm. Exactly.
I don't see why you can do that.
Yeah. No,
you know,
totally.
Even if he's assistant or the fourth official, he's still got the best view of the tackle.
Yeah.
And has we're always getting told that the referees that they see it once and their initial reaction is the right one. Now, Anthony Perfect. Taylor's initial reaction would have been a yellow card. You see him getting the card out. You actually see him going to write Fabian Delph's name in it.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden he changes, and, you know, he's an experienced referee. And I thought it was just a bit of a shambles, if I'm being honest. You know, in the day and age, and look, they've managed recently. And the worst thing for a manager after a game, especially after a defeat, is to come out and speak to you guys, you know, 10-15 minutes after the game. Now, if managers have to do that, with all the emotion that's going on, I don't see after half an hour after the game, you're not allowed to see the referee.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the time, my own personal opinion, and I can say this because I don't want to go into management anymore without getting into trouble, I think the referee, his assistants, the fourth official and the assessor, they get together in that half an hour, and any major decisions which they think go wrong, they concoct their own story to try and get the referee off the hook. And I think that would have been the same last night. I really do. How he can change his mind in a split second, when we're always getting told that their initial reaction is the right one, to turn around and do that. It's just beyond me. And I can understand why Pitt was upset. I can understand why the players were upset.
Yeah.
It's not if he'd pulled the red card out straight away, it's open to opinion.
That's it.
I think for us all, you know, Nicola, Paul, people listening to this pod, they will all have their own opinion whether it was a red, a yellow, or whatever it was.
Yes.
But the fact that he's done that is quite unacceptable for somebody of his experience.
Exactly, and that's exactly just what Paul Serres and I were just talking about. And Paul Serres, you said the word consistency, which I think is exactly what you've just kind of touched on, Paul Dickov, is it,
yeah.
You know, you just want consistency, and to see that yellow card come out and for the next thing for Fabian to be leaving the pitch, it was just, as you say, a bit chaotic, Paul Serres.
It was shambolic, really, and... look, I mean, I commentate on football and I do so, you know, pretty regularly, and I've done so for a long time. And I think the thing that experience gives you is the realization that you should trust your instinct. When
yes.
you commentate on a game, look, in the social media age, when you can watch an incident over and over, you know, as soon as it happens, it's
yes.
easy to come to the right conclusion.
Exactly.
When
yes.
you're commentating on a game or you're refereeing a game, it's important that you trust your first instinct.
Yes.
And now it may come out that Anthony Taylor, I mean, he clearly, he'd written Fabian Delph's name down on that yellow card. I've no real problem with the referee speaking with his assistants. You know, they're mic'd up for that very reason, to get a better, more balanced opinion on every incident that goes on. But his initial instinct was to show a yellow card. My issue is not that Fabian Delph was sent off.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is the same as Paul's, that Anthony Taylor appeared to have been influenced into changing his mind from yellow to red.
Yep.
Saying that, look, I mean... We spoke off air, didn't we, Nicola, about what constitutes a reckless or a dangerous challenge. And
yep.
Fabian Delph tucked his trailing leg in. He led with his toe pointed. I think it's very, very difficult, and I'm sure Paul Dickov will confirm this, that when there's a ball that drops in the 50-50 area and you're, you know, a burst of pace, a sprint over 5 meters to try and get there first, it's very, very difficult then to rein yourself in at the point that you get to the ball. To make it a clean, fair challenge. That, look, if you're sprinting towards a ball and you go in for a challenge, it's going to be excessively forceful. I think that's there's nothing really that you can do about that. Look, I have no real complaints about it being a red card. To be honest, I have a real issue with the way that it was done. And
Paul, do you not think in this day and age? And I'll go back to my point before, that managers are accountable, players are accountable.
Mm.
The referee should be accountable to come out and explain the decisions. I think you would get a lot more respect off the fans, off the media, off everybody, even if you don't agree with what they're saying and why they made the decision. The
yes.
fact that they're being made accountable and coming out and explaining why, they would get a lot more respect off people.
We've had a similar conversation about VAR and about how the supporters in the stadium are the last to know what's going on. And the easy way around that is to mic up the referees and make that audio available, you know, via the big screens while the discussion's going on between the video assistant referee and the man in the middle. And it's similarly, you know, there's an argument to say that the referees and their assistants should be, the audio should be available. I mean, whether that's just, you know, for television viewers or for everybody.
Yeah.
But somebody for the PGMOL should come out and do it. But whether, if they don't want the referee to do it after a game, half an hour after a game. I mean, I've said before, I've been in the referees' rooms after a game. There's about six people in there.
Yeah.
As well as the referees. So, you know, you've got the assessor and the assessor's assessor and the assessor's assessor's assessor. You know, it's just jobs for the sake of it, I think, half the time. and one of them should come out and explain the decisions.
Yes, even have a little few bullet points and say this is the, you know, this is what we have from the referee and assistants. Or, yeah, interesting point, as you say. Listen, we can have a whole pod around this, around the decision, around VAR, around, you know, where the game's going, I suppose, because things like these do affect the game as a whole. But listen, let's wrap up last night's result and exit from the FA Cup. I see this morning Kevin Coban was saying that it was more disappointing than that 2013 defeat by Wigan in the final of the Cup. I think that's a little far-fetched. I was at that game and I don't think
awful.
that That was terrible. I think that's maybe a little far-fetched. But just to sum up, Paul Dickov, disappointing, obviously, to be out of the FA Cup. A lot of talk on Twitter and other social platforms about the quadruple being off. But listen, plenty to focus on.
Of course there is. And look, every week we're talking about the quadruple and can we do it? I thought it was going to be really difficult. To win all four trophies. I must admit, I didn't expect us to go out to Wigan. But at the same time, you know, we can go on about being with 10 men, we can go on about maybe not being at our best, missing chances, but I think, well, let's give Wigan a bit of credit as well. You know, Paul Cooks and Liam Richardson, his assistant, and good friends of mine, and as much as I was desperate for City to win, there was a part of me that loves the underdog as well. And seeing Paul Cook, young British manager, managed non-league. Chesterfield, Portsmouth, all lower level, League One, now with Wigan. You know, let's give Paul and his team a bit of credit for that as well.
Very good point, Paul Dickov.
City aren't the only Premier League team that have gone out to Wigan this season. And, you know, Paul Cook has done an amazing job. You know, when he took over, they were sort of, you know, bottom half of the League One table and on a downward spiral. And now they're sort of, you know, you would be very, very surprised if they didn't get promoted. So, all credit to them. I thought they defended incredibly. And just probably the last word on it about Kevin De Bruyne, the difference that he made when he came on. I get that he can't play 65 games a season. But I think the first hour or so. I think the first hour or so. You know, within sort of 6 or 7 minutes of him coming on, he created three incredible opportunities to...
The whole level just stepped up as soon as he got on the pitch, didn't it?
He's immense. What a player. He's incredible.
He's exceptional. He's exceptional. Yeah,
just one last thing, and I know Phil, our friend from Beyond the Pitch, will like this one. I've never seen Man United fans so active on social media when they've not played. I think that just shows us how far we've all come.
Brilliant. So listen, yes, we can sum up. Good luck to Wigan going forward and Paul Cook and his side. And listen, little shout out for Will Grigg, he's on fire again.
To get the little Irish connection in
there. Fair play to him. That song gets even more legs. Will Grigg's on fire. So listen, fair play to them and good luck to them. Okay, let's take a little look at the game against Basel in the Champions League.
Well done.
Sorry, I do have an issue with Basel. I don't know, but Basel, it is a great win away in Switzerland. Great performance, and you would think that that was a giant step towards the quarterfinals, Paul Serres.
Yeah, huge. You know, I like to try and maintain a realistic approach to things, and you know, Basel have done really well to make it beyond the group stage of this competition. I think they've won the domestic title 8 seasons in a row. This year they're 8 points behind Young Boys in the domestic table, so this isn't a vintage Basel. But even so, to go away from home in the Champions League knockout stage round of 16 and to stick 4 past your opposition, doesn't matter who they are, is an incredible, I won't say achievement, because we've achieved nothing yet, as everybody else likes to point out. But it's a pretty fantastic result. And then, of course, it gives us the opportunity to maybe give one or two, the Kevin De Bruyne's, the David Silva's, maybe even Sergio Aguero a rest for that second leg and keep our powder dry, you know, for the games. We've got a few very, very tricky looking games coming up. We've got Arsenal in the cup final and in the league. We've got Chelsea in the league. We've got Basel, and then, you know, the quarterfinals come pretty quickly on the back of that. So, you know, we've got Gabriel Jesus coming back at a good time. Leroy Sané came back pretty quickly as well from his injury. So it's an opportunity, I think, without being complacent, without taking the game too lightly, to work on the fitness of those who have just come back from injury, and also to give those who are, you know, at risk of a bit of a burnout a rest going into the most important part of the season.
Absolutely. Paul Dickov, Pep after that game, in Switzerland called Ilkay Gundogan. called Ilkay Gundogan Extraordinary. It obviously scored twice. He had a fantastic game, and I just thought after that game, how nice it was to see, with the difficulties he's had with injuries and keeping fit, the potential of someone like Ilkay Gundogan, and to see it on display.
Yeah, and I think over the last 5 weeks, you know, when David Silva has been missing, he's come in, and you know, to come back from not just the one injury that he's had, but the injury that he picked up when he was at Dortmund, you know, yep. Two very serious injuries. You see a lot of players don't come back from one, never mind two.
Yep.
You can tell by how he handles himself in interviews that he's a great guy. But you can also tell that he's a fantastic professional to go with the talent he's got. You know, he's got a little bit of everything. He can, as a midfielder, he can make that third man run. And behind, he's scoring with headers from corners. But on the ball, he's just a classy player. You can tell why they call him Silky Ilkay, can't you?
Exactly.
He is. He's a silky player. But I think everybody's delighted for him because the mental strength, not just the physical strength, mentally to come back from the two serious injuries is full credit to him. As I said, not just in the Basel game, I think the recent games when David Silva's been out and he's come in, he's really stepped up to the plate, as has Bernardo Silva as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, that they've both had to bide their time this season, and in this day and age where there's a lot of egos flying about when players aren't playing and they spit their dummy out, they've bought in, like the whole squad has, into the squad mentality that Pep's, and they've waited patiently for their chances. And when they've got them, they've taken them. They're both getting better and better with every game.
Yeah.
Just a word about both, actually, from me, because I think that some supporters just presume that when a player is out long term, out injured long term, that that it's a, you know, essentially a permanent holiday, and you know, and it's an easy life, and
it's a lonely place.
Absolutely. And Rory Smith wrote something for the New York Times about Ilkay Gundogan and his injury, and it really opened my eyes to what a terrible place mentally Ilkay Gundogan must have been in. So to see him back and playing a really important part for City is great to see. And you just, like you said, Paul, he seems like such a good guy that you want him to really do well, and you,
absolutely.
It makes me happy to see him do well. And Bernardo Silva this season, it reminds me a little bit of Leroy Sané last year. You know, he had to wait for his opportunity. He didn't really get used a great deal pre-Christmas. And then after the new year, Sané came in and really powered on and was brilliant towards the end of last year, you know. So, and Pep said this week about Bernardo Silva, look, as long as I'm here, Bernardo Silva will be as well. It's I can't tell you how patient and how much of a good guy he is to be so patient and wait for his opportunity. He never complains. He's always happy. And again, I know we've spoken about it probably to, you know, to the point that it's making people sick, but it just shows the importance of having good people as well as good players in your
Absolutely.
Squad at a football club. So, you know, it's tricky. It's really tricky to find that balance, but we seem to have that, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. And just to touch on that Ilkay Gundogan point, I've interviewed Ilkay a number of times, and I remember him arriving at the club and doing a Facebook Live with him in the dressing room when he arrived. And he's just like you say, like both of you said, he's a very warm, very, very nice person.
Yeah.
And you say, Paul Dick, of the mental strength that's required to come through those injuries on top of the physical strength is just incredible. So listen, great to see him in such good form, getting a couple of goals under his belt, and hopefully we'll see more in the coming weeks and months. Okay, so that return leg at home at the Etihad Stadium against Basel is on the 7th of March, so we'll look forward to that. Great to have the Champions League back, isn't it? You really do miss it when it's not
yeah,
on,
it is.
Don't you?
It's great, and look, I think it's Paul's touching it before, it's the ideal opportunity, being 4-0 up to maybe rest a couple, but obviously get game time.
Yes.
And a few of them as well, and
maybe,
you know,
get a couple of the young lads out.
Absolutely, and being City fans, you know, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. But
no.
I'm pretty sure we're in the quarterfinals already, and when we get there, you know, there's going to be One of Juve and Tottenham going out, one of Chelsea, Barca going out, one of PSG, Real Madrid going out. It's, you know, and we could quite easily have won the league by then. So it'll give Pep the time, you know, to rest players and get a fully fit squad and a flying squad out for the quarterfinals, whoever we play against.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, on to the league. There have been three games since we last spoke. We had the midweek win over West Brom, the 3-0. We had the draw away at Burnley, of course, which there was a few talking points around as well. And then most recently, we had the 5-1 win over Leicester with that incredible performance from Sergio Aguero. Okay, first of all, let's start with the West Brom. I was actually at this game, the midweek game. Again, another pretty comprehensive win, Paul Serres, over West Brom.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, so frequently when a new manager comes in to a mid-season to a struggling club, you get that boost, at least offensively.
Yes.
West Brom don't really seem to have had that under Pardew. And it's been difficult for them, I think, in recent weeks with the situation, obviously, that happened in Barcelona. But yeah. I never saw them getting that boost that you would have expected them to have gotten, with the new manager coming in. And I don't know, it was a fairly routine victory, wasn't it? I mean, that early-ish goal from Fernandinho. There have been games this season where, you know, even City have got an early goal, it's never really felt comfortable. And we saw it again, you know, with Burnley. That was not a particularly comfortable game, even though Burnley have been struggling as well of late.
Yeah.
But that just felt like a routine victory. And I don't know. I don't know if Pardew's been able to motivate his squad since he's come in, but his record is very, very similar to the previous manager. So, yeah, I mean, it was just a run-of-the-mill routine kind of victory, which there are very, very few of those in the Premier League, I think. But again, I mean, Kevin De Bruyne was excellent. I can't remember him having a bad game for City, not this season anyway. It's remarkable, really.
Yeah, I was just actually, excuse me, thinking about the game and thinking about Kevin and thinking, can I mention him again? Paul Dickov, he's just such a prominent figure. And, you know, as I say, reflecting on that game just now, all I could think about was Kevin De Bruyne. And
it was sensational, as it has been all season. Yeah. And going back to Paul's point on West Brom, I was so disappointed in them. I think more disappointed than any team that's came to the Etihad this season. You know, as if they were caught between a rock and a hard place, as if they looked as if they didn't know what to do. And we ended up winning the game 3-0, and I know you were there, Nicola. We didn't have to get out second gear for the game.
Yep.
That was always going to be comfortable, you know, from Fernandinho scored, and then Kevin De Bruyne just absolutely ran the show. It was a superb performance. But then if you're West Brom, you've got to look at that game and think, what actually did we do to make it more difficult for Man City? And there wasn't a lot. You know, it was a bit, I know there's never a nothing game, but being at the ground and seeing the way West Brom set up and the way they played, it was as if it was a gimme. They may as well just gave us the 3 points, the 3 goals, and not bother turning up.
I agree. Different story, Paul Serres at Burnley. Obviously a late equaliser, but, you know, they did come out and they gave us a game at their home ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough place to go. And I know that I think it was at the time, they'd gone 10 games without a win, I think. And
that's right.
Even then, you didn't expect it to be as straightforward as many probably non-City supporters and those in the media expected it to be. It's always tough, and they always seem to play well against us. Obviously, it would be remiss of us to not mention that opportunity for Raheem Sterling, but for me, he gets a pass on that because he's just been sensational for us.
Exactly.
Yeah, of course, so many late goals that he's scored that have won us, you know, key points and got us great results where it didn't look as though it was going to happen. You know, he gets a free pass for me on that. I mean, it would have been a completely different story, obviously, had that gone in. But as things stand right now, we're 16 points clear at the top of the Premier League. So if we're going to miss an opportunity to put a game to bed, then I'd rather it be in the Premier League at the moment than in the Champions League or in the League Cup final at the weekend. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's I wonder. It's difficult, really, because you know they're only on 36 points, Burnley. But I wonder if they feel maybe that they're safe and I mean, they're on 36 points, but they're in seventh place in the league, which is, you know, at this stage of the season is remarkable, really, I think.
Yeah.
I wonder if they feel that they're safe and I don't know. It's a strange one because they started so well. They were top of the Premier League earlier on in the season for a while, I think. And it's a strange one, really. But it's been a while since they got a really positive result, or at least a run of results. So, you know, I think I probably would have taken a draw away at Burnley.
Yeah, I think
it sounds ridiculous,
point.
But
no, I agree. Now, a lot of the talking points around that game were the Raheem miss, but as you say, Paul Sarris, I think he deserves a pass for that. What got overlooked was Danilo, and his wonderful goal.
It was a fantastic finish. You know, it's not often you see a left back cut in his right foot and stick one right in the top corner. But even before that game, it was always going to be a difficult game. You know, Sean Dyche was always going to have his team up for it. The record against the top six as such has always been good, made it really difficult. I thought Ben Mee, who was actually a young kid at City when I was there, thought he was outstanding. I thought he was by far one of the best defenders on the pitch. The thing that made me laugh the most about it was afterwards was the reaction about it. It was like, oh no, we've drawn, what's happening? It was crazy for me, and it was making me laugh looking through social media and reading things in the paper and on the Sunday, because the week before we were 12 points clear. You know, we get
exactly.
And a week later there was all this. It was like people were going crazy because we'd drawn a game, but we were actually a point better off because we were 13 points clear a week later on. You know, so I was like, come on guys, let's get a bit of perspective on this from where we are. And then you look at that point, and then you look at us now being 16 points clear as well. You know, so it was a big point for us, and I think it was a good point. You know, Raheem scores, we win the game quite comfortably, but as you said, we'll give them a pass. And the old Strikers Union, I've been there many a time, trust me. It's you just want that ground to swallow you up straight away.
Yes.
But then we're talking about character and mentality to come out the next week and have a very similar chance early doors and then to score it. Just shows you what a positive frame of mind he's in, because a lot of players wouldn't even have been in that position after the miss the week before. You know, then a week later against Leicester, early doors, he's in there, same position, back post, scoring the goal again.
Totally, and we've seen with Raheem, I think before Pep's arrival, that maybe would have got to him a bit more, the head would have dropped. You know, Raheem, God love him, he comes in for such a hard time on social media, and as we know, but, you know, as you say, that strength of character is there now, you can see it.
And it's a desire to get in there, to get in the same place again. Because, look, I mean, trust me on this. When you've had a miss like that, and straight away in the next game, a chance comes to you, you can be really apprehensive sometimes.
I'm sure.
Because it's at the back of your mind. People have been talking about it all week.
Yeah.
So for him to, one, break his neck to get in the position at the back post again, but two, have the confidence and the mentality to finish it off, it shows you how far he's come in a short space of time.
Yep. It really does, and the relief. I mean, the relief was not. It's probably going to word this wrongly, but the relief that he clearly felt when he scored was not. It was not the kind of relief that, you know, he had the chance and he made up for last week. It was. He was just so desperate.
He was to make amends.
Exactly, desperate to make amends rather than thankful that he had made amends. You know, he was really desperate and really fired up to get into that position and to redeem himself, really. Not that there was much need for him to redeem himself. As I said, he's been utterly brilliant. He's been clinical for the most part the whole season. There is a bit of that in him, I think. There is a you're never really as confident with Raheem through on goal or in a goal scoring opportunity as you are with Sergio Aguero or with other players, but you know, the statistics put that on completely on its head this season, because he has been absolutely ruthless in front of goals. So
that's the difference between a very good player and a top player, is getting yourself back into that position again after things have went against you, and that's what stands him out, and that's why he's up there with the goal scorers, and he's up there with he won't get it, but I think if statistically he's not going to be far off the player of the season with his goals and his assists and chances created and everything else. And, you know, good players do it once every four games or once every three games. The top players consistently do it. And if they have a bad time, they make sure that they make amends very, very quickly. And they're in the right place at the right time. And, you know, forget about what's gone, because you can't change that. You know, that's the mentality that these guys have. You've got to look forward and make sure that you put it right the next time.
You've led us very well into the next game, Paul, with those points about consistency, about top class, and about constantly giving on the pitch. And Sergio Aguero certainly did it in the following league game with the 5-1 win over Leicester. Aguero, of course, getting four second-half goals, Paul Serres, and I think he most definitely falls into that category that Paul Dickov has just described.
Oh yeah, I mean he loves scoring goals. I mean it's obvious to see, it's clear to see, and his appetite. This is the thing that I admire about coaches like Diego Simeone, for example. His team will play the same way whether they're 4-0 down or 4-0 up.
Yes.
And you know, there's particularly, I think, I don't know if you remember I'm sure you do, the European Championship final where Spain hammered Italy. And towards the end of the game, you know, the Italians were furious with Spain because they thought, you know, the game is over. Why are you still trying to score more goals against us? And it's not a particularly sporting thing to do. And I think, you know, screw that. Like, this is why I love Simeone, because if you're 4-0 down against Simeone, you're not going to go through the motions for the last 10 minutes. You're going to have to keep playing and keep defending, because he wants five, he wants six, he wants seven. And, you know, I've got huge admiration for that kind of mentality in football. And Aguero has that mentality. He's an absolute killer when it comes to scoring goals. And, you know, even in the 90th minute, he let fly from distance to try and, you know, get another goal, and he's still, after that, he was still going for more and more. And that kind of ruthlessness in football is for me, it's a beautiful thing. And what else is there to say about Sergio? You know, we've spoken about him a lot, and as the years have gone on, I've taken less and less notice really of social media, because it's not, you know, it used to be that you'd meet your friends in the pub after the game and you'd talk through it, and everyone's had a chance to sort of evaluate the game in its totality rather than reacting to every single incident that happens. And, you know, at half time, there were people saying on Twitter that Sergio's done, he's lost his pace and he's passed it. And, you know, and it's farcical. It makes people look ridiculous. But when you take that game in its entirety, you know, he wasn't at his best in the first half, but he remained patient. He remained completely confident in himself, and he walked away arguing with Kevin De Bruyne about who's going to get the match ball for the goals or the assists.
Yes.
You know, so
look, was it Sergio, three or four assists from KDB?
It was three assists.
Three assists.
Foden assisted the last one, didn't he, for Aguero, great to see. But yeah, I mean, look, Sergio is I wouldn't swap him for anybody. I really genuinely wouldn't swap him for anybody in that sort of straight number nine role. And he's only 29. He's got years left ahead of him. And we've spoken about this before as well. We know that he wants to go home at some point and finish his career with Independiente. Who can blame him? It's his club, you know. Yep. He's been with us for a long time now. And there's no doubt that he loves scoring goals, and he loves scoring goals for City. And he's still got a lot to win here, fingers crossed. So
he might even be mentioned in the same breath as Paul Dickov.
Maybe.
When he
stole my thunder with that goal.
he did. He absolutely did.
But just repeat everything Paul said. I love him. I think he's just a top, top class, but one of the best strikers, if not the best striker, in the role that he plays, and his desire and hunger to get more goals. And there's a great point that Paul made there about Simeone. Yes. You know, Pep's got the similar mentality. I was sitting watching the game, and at 3-1, there wasn't very long to go. Now, a lot of coaches would have took the centre forward off.
Yeah.
And even when he scored his hat trick, then he would have took them off. Pep sending out the signal, and Aguero wanted to stay on. You know, they're not just settling for 3 and 4. If they get the third, they want to go and get the fourth, and then they want to go and get the fifth and sixth, and however it may be. And, you know, and that comes from the top, that comes from the manager. You know, how many times 100%. Do you see a player on 2 goals or 3 goals with 10, 15 minutes left, and the manager takes them off so he can get a round of applause by the crowd and give them a little rest and everything else? There's none of that at Man City because you want to, every step, not just every game, every minute of every game, they want to be the best they can.
Absolutely. The hunger, the desire, and the professionalism as well, you know. Yes, no, absolutely. So, like you said, Paul Sarah, 16 points now is the gap at the top of the league. So, just incredible to see that. Okay. Gosh, I'm exhausted. We've had a lot, and we've got even more coming up, which is even more exciting. First of all, of course, we have a cup final at Wembley against Arsenal. Paul Dickov, Wembley, one of your hotspots. You know, for what I'd like to hear, and I'm sure what the listeners would like to hear, is, you know, I'm sure, I don't know, as a footballer, I imagine that you cannot beat experiences like these and playing at such an iconic ground.
No, not at all. And look, it was the old Wembley that we were at. Obviously going back to 99, and maybe not got the same esteem as the FA Cup, but it was a massive game for us all at the time, you know. And recent seasons, City fans have probably been spoiled with their trips to Wembley. You know, the one we had was the first in a very, very long time for the club. And the whole experience is, as a footballer, you know, growing up, albeit in Scotland, it was always my dream to play at Wembley, you know, as you said, the iconic stage. And the biggest thing I can remember about it was the week before, you know, and we were training and we were going past Main Road, and just queues and queues and queues of City fans. Thousands of them camping out, waiting hours and hours to get their tickets.
Brilliant.
It was an amazing sight for us as players, and getting into the game knowing that we didn't want to let the fans down was the biggest thing for us. You know, that season especially, it seemed the worse we got as a team, the better the support got.
Yeah.
You know, no. And it was
in this true city fashion.
Yeah, it was. And you know, and some of the away grounds we went to, they didn't just take over the actual stadiums, if you could call them stadiums, some of them were. They took over the actual town and the city. I think it was a huge day out for everybody. And then for it to come down to that one last game and it being at Wembley, you know, and I remember Willie Donicus just saying to us, don't get caught up in the occasion. Well, it's different for these players now, but because they're used to these occasions and they're used to winning trophies and being at the top end. But for us, it was Willie said to us, and that stuck in my head. He said that this place, this stadium, the pitch, he said it can sap you up straight away. He said, so just don't let that happen.
Did you have any sense of that? Did you, I mean, in the early stages, was it difficult to deal with all of that in the early stages of that game?
Honestly, the way I so wanted just to soak it all up.
Yes.
And make sure that come the end of the game, although I nearly did have, was just have no regrets about it whatsoever.
Yes.
You know, and try and remember everything, because I'm not speaking to Willie Donicky as well, who'd been there and played in Scotland, England internationals. He says the game can take you away to the point that you finish the game and you can't remember things that have happened within it. It's such that big an occasion playing at Wembley, and I was determined for that not to happen. And I was the lucky little git that managed to score the goal at the end, which is something that will stay with me forever.
And what a goal it was. Let's not forget.
Yep. Yeah, originally it was a fantastic occasion for us all.
Yeah.
I think every emotion possible happened in 95 minutes or 120 minutes, whatever it was. You know, the agony and the of being 2-0 down, the devastation of that, and then the elation of scoring the goal and then winning in penalties. It was just a fantastic day, and talking about Wembley, what a stadium and what a place to have done that as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Paul Serres, as a fan, as a big, big Blue, what are your memories of that?
As you know, with many memories associated with City, I remember more the feeling of just utter devastation at 2-0 down. I really do, because it felt like we were on our way back, you know, and it really did. It's easy to sort of overhype things when you look back, but that was such a crucial moment for City. Yeah. You know, to come back into the second tier at the first time of asking, particularly after things hadn't been that, you know, hadn't been smooth throughout that one season in the third tier. It's almost like that season is almost Manchester City in microcosm, you know, to go from plunge in the depths to the absolute elation of that dick off goal in the last minute in injury time, you know.
Yes.
That's almost like following City and, you know, over a lifetime. And I just remember thinking at 2-0 down, I remember thinking this isn't how it was supposed to be. Just being generally, you know, genuinely just gobsmacked by losing to Gillingham. You know, I didn't even know where Gillingham was. I didn't even know where it was.
Yeah,
that's because you've never been there, Dick. Yeah, and rightly so, you'd never be welcome. I just, you know, I remember just thinking the distinct memory of being gutted, having that sick feeling in the pits of my stomach and thinking, wow, another season of this. And it's interesting what you said, Paul. I never really thought about it like that. But when you go from playing the whole season at, you know, at Sinsel Bank and Adams Park and places like that, and then you get to Wembley, and the difference between those, that's when the playoffs, I think, feel amazing for
absolutely. And our last game before that, Paul, was the last ever game at Springfield Park at Wigan. Mm. You know, the old stadium, and it's quite a contrast, as you say, from going to the York Cities, the Wrexham, Colchester's old ground, Lair Road, and then all of a sudden you're playing in front of 90,000 people at Wembley. It was amazing.
I think Wembley has lost its sparkle a bit, and you know, for me to be able to go and watch City at Wembley, I would every game that City ever play at Wembley, I will be there, because I dreamt about it for so long, you know, and it never seemed like it would ever really sort of happen. So I'm not going to sit here and start saying, oh, Wembley this, Wembley that. For me, it's still an amazing experience to go there, even when we lose, you know, even that Community Shield against United when we were 2-0 up and coasting and we ended up throwing it away. It was still a great experience, but you know, when you're in the Premier League and you go to the Emirates and you go to Old Trafford and you play every week at the Etihad, you know, and I think these stadiums are very, very close to being the kind of place that Wembley is, without the aura, obviously, but the juxtaposition between going to the very small, run-down, old, dilapidated stadiums, and then the last game of your season being at Wembley. I mean, that's magical, you know. But and it's lost a little bit of that, particularly with the FA Cup semi-finals being there. Although that semi-final against United was a brilliant experience. And Tottenham playing. I understand why Spurs are playing their football there. But that sort of takes away from the magic. But when you spend £750 million on a new stadium, you need to get as much use of that out of that as you possibly can, and it takes away the mystique a little bit. But that season was that was the highs and the lows encapsulated into 9 months of football, and that's why we love it. You know,
a few years on.
Of course it did, and Paul says that I'll live with him forever, and you know, of course it will, but it will live with an awful lot of people forever as well, because that moment of ecstasy, from that moment, it was never in doubt, whereas before that moment, it was never going to happen. And you know,
do you know what, Paul, I always remember, and it's something that, you know, Willie Donicky saying to you, don't let the game pass you by, try to remember every little thing. When Kevin Horlock scored at 2-1, and it's easy saying that now, I knew we were going to get back in the game. It's the first time I've ever seen opposition players, when they've conceded a goal, still high-fiving each other. They thought they had the game won.
Yeah.
You know, Tony Pulis had just taken off Bob Taylor and Carlos Saba, who were arguably, apart from me and the GOAT, of course, the best strike partnership in the league. he took them off, and they were celebrating. They believed that game was won. And I just remember thinking that we are going to get another chance here because they've switched off.
Yes.
You know, and I can remember that feeling more than I can actually scoring the goal, which is bizarre. I could see them. They were walking around high-fiving each other and patting themselves. And I'm thinking, they've just conceded a goal. What we can get because they've switched off. It was bizarre, really. But thankfully, yeah, they did switch off and then we managed to get the goal.
And the rest is history.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's funny, actually, because I was... it's probably not a good example, but I was in Brazil for the World Cup, and I was in... I can't remember where the game was now, but I was watching Japan against Ivory Coast, and Japan were leading. They were a goal up, and Wilfried Bony had started the game for Ivory Coast, and then about the hour mark, the weather was so bad, it was raining so hard that everybody had moved back towards the back of the stands, and I was behind one of the goals, and I took the chance to walk around. It was in the northeast. It wasn't Salvador, but anyway, I took the opportunity to walk around and sit behind the bench because the first five or six rows were just empty.
Brilliant.
So I walked around the stadium and sat behind the, like, literally between the benches, about five rows from the pitch. And Didier Drogba stood up and he took his tracksuit off. And I will remember this until the day I lose my mind or die, whichever one comes first. I remember the entire Japan defense looking over at the bench, and I knew from that moment that Ivory Coast were going to win that game.
Yeah.
Because they shrunk. They absolutely shrunk. And the fear, the absolute fear that passed through the whole Japan team was palpable. And I've never seen anything like it before in football. And I knew from that moment that was it, and Ivory Coast came back to win it 2-1, and all it took was a man standing up, you know. So that kind of moment in football that affects your mentality is one of those unquantifiable moments, you know, that no statistic will ever tell you the story of that moment. But as soon as Didier Drogba stood up, that was it. I knew it, and I think the whole stadium knew it. And I've never seen anything, particularly at that level, I've never seen anything like that before or since.
Absolutely. I played some five-a-side last night, actually, would you believe, and I had a moment of where I just knew I was going to score, and
did all the other players shrink when you walked on the
pitch? They absolutely shrunk.
The Drogba effect for McCarthy.
That was it. They knew in that moment things were going to change. But listen, amazing, lovely to touch on those memories. As you said, it's up there, the 93-20, the 1999. I mean, these are the two big ones, really. So, Paul Digoff, thanks for those memories. Paul Sarris, thanks for those memories. But let's come back to the present day. Let's come back to the game against Arsenal. You can imagine that this will be an open attacking game. Arsenal have made some very interesting signings, strengthened the squad. I actually think it's a very interesting time for Arsenal. Paul Digoff, what are your thoughts? How do you think the teams will line out? What do you expect from the game? What do you think the biggest threats are that Arsenal pose for us?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be a fantastic football game for people to watch. You know, the big Wembley pitch, two teams that, you know, want to play attacking football, attractive football. I think the signing of Aubameyang is a great signing for Arsenal. I really do.
Absolutely.
I'm surprised that they didn't do that 3-4 years ago.
Yeah,
and go out. Mkhitaryan, I think, is a good signing. He'll have a manager who'll look after him and manage him properly and put an arm around him. You know, he's already hit the ground running with a load of assists. But Aubameyang's the big threat for me in that big Wembley pitch. He's pacing behind. But as always, the old Achilles heel with Arsenal was defensively, you know.
Yes.
And it's going to be an open game, which I think will suit us more than it will Arsenal.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you know, if I want to sum it up, we have got better players than them in every position.
Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about, absolutely, you're talking about Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang, possibly Jack Wilshere. been up there as top players. You go through our squad and it's just littered with them, especially the front five or front six going forward. And I think the size of the Wembley pitch, the way we use big pitches, the width that that we have in Sané and Sterling and the fullbacks bombing forward, I think we could cause Arsenal all sorts of problems. And then, you know, you've got David Silva now back, De Bruyne. I expect Pep to pick his strongest team. Just be interested in what his centre-half partnership is, what his preferred one. But I think going forward, it'll be, as always, it'll be De Bruyne, Silva, Sané, Sterling, and your man Aguero with Fernandinho in behind him. And then you look at the bench, and we've spoke about Bernardo Silva, we've spoke about Gundogan, and possible of Gabriel Jesus being back as well. You know, and so all over, I just think we're going to be so strong. But I'm so looking forward to watching the game. So I think it's going to be a great one to watch.
And I know you're going to be in New York.
I'm working.
For that one. You're working in New York. God, tough our life about politics.
I know. The club asked me if I would mind representing an event in New York for the final. So,
oh, God, I love
it
you.
It took me about half a millisecond to say yes.
That long?
It did. And unfortunately, I did try to get you guys to come with me, but they weren't having it.
Well, listen, you know what you've got to do next time.
Absolutely,
especially if it's a Champions League final, Paul Dickov, there'll be no questions. Where you go, we go for that one.
Absolutely.
But listen, I imagine you'll be down at the Mad Hatter, will you, in New York? This
I think that'll be there. Cool. The City Supporters Club. But
great spot.
Again, it's, you know, I've been lucky enough over the last year to do a lot of the events that the club do, and I've got to say that what they do for the fans, not just in England, but what they do for the fans abroad, is just fantastic. You know, it's top class, and the club need to take a lot of credit for that.
Absolutely. Okay, Paul Serres, back to the match. We've mentioned the defence, potentially Arsenal's weak spot. I think I remember actually Jamie Carragher earlier this season describing their defence as Sunday League, which is maybe a little harsh, to be fair. But do you feel it is something that that will be their weak point come Sunday?
Yeah, absolutely. But I've got this, I don't know if it's irrational, but I've got this fear of Arsenal. I remember going back many, many years, I might have even been their invincible season, when they came to Manchester, and we had to play Richard Dunn at right back and Thierry Henry. I think they were 5-0 up within about 20 minutes. And since then, I've had this irrational fear of Arsenal. And I think that with the pace and the intelligence that they've got in the final third of the pitch, and that high line that City like to play, the space between Edison and the defence, I think that is the kind of that's where Arsenal's front five or six can thrive. The Mkhitaryan is, you know, he's quick, but he's not quick compared to Aubameyang, and Aubameyang is the real fear, I think, and Lacazette too. I know he's injured, but I think that, I mean, they always produce goals, these games. The last six or seven have been 2-1 or 2-2 or 3-2 even between City and Arsenal. And I know they're way, way off the pace. They're down in six. They've got 25 fewer points than City have at, you know, this stage of the season, which is amazing, really. But they've got great experience of winning cups in recent years.
Yeah, and that 2-1 win over Chelsea in May, of course, that was in the FA Cup. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, Arsenal have won the FA Cup 13 times, and Wenger's got seven of those as coach, which is absolutely remarkable, really.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's come under an awful lot of criticism in recent years. Some of it justified, some of it maybe because Arsenal fans were more spoiled by the football and the players that they saw, you know, at Highbury and then at the Emirates early on in his reign. They've been stymied, really, by the new stadium and having to pay for that. But I think they'll be well up for this one. There's been a bit of bad blood between City and Arsenal in recent years since the takeover with Adebayor and Kolo and Nasri and one or two others that have made their way from North London to the northwest of England.
Yeah.
I'm not confident, really, but I never am when it comes to City. But I think Ozil, keeping Ozil and getting him, you know, to sign a new contract is massive for Arsenal. Yes, it's huge. It's enormous.
He's a massive character, both on and off the pitch, isn't he?
Yeah, Oza? Yeah, he is. Yeah. And he's another player that seems like a pretty nice guy to me, and a player
absolutely.
I love to watch play. I think with Mkhitaryan, with Aubameyang, and interesting that Paul said with Wiltshire as well, because I really like Jack Wiltshire. I really like him. He's a fantastic player. He's a wonderful player. You know, he struggled to trust him in an England squad for a tournament in the summer, you know, but he's shown this season that maybe his injury issues are behind him. Maybe he has, you know, developed and matured physically to a point in his career now where you can rely on him to play four games in a month or you know, five or even maybe six games in a month in an international tournament. He offers something that the very few English central midfielders do. He's a great balance, I think, between the physical. He loves to get involved in the game, but also the quality, and he's got a real fire in his belly too. So their defence is the weakness, but if they play to their strengths, which they've been reluctant to do, I think, in more recent seasons, they used to be a really free-flowing attacking team. I think that as Wenger has seen the level of the team as a whole drop, he's become much more reactive as a coach as opposed to sending his team out there to play as he wants. And I think if they do that against City, I think they'll lose. But I think if they go out to attack City at the weekend, I think they've got a very good chance of getting a result. Obviously, you know, an early goal changes things. And I can't genuinely, confidently say that I think City will go on and win at Wembley at the weekend, which probably sounds a bit crazy to some people listening. But I'm sure it'll be a good game. And not often cup finals are that good. But I'm sure it will be a great game at the weekend, and it's one I'm looking forward to.
Absolutely, me too. And that game is, of course, this Sunday, 3:30 p.m. at Wembley. So we will look forward to that. And, of course, we'll have plenty to talk about, I'm sure, on the pod next week. Okay, well, I'm just going to push you then, both of you, very quickly in a one-liner score prediction. I know these things are always very, very difficult, but let's just have a little bit of fun with this and let's go for a score prediction, Paul Zikoff.
3-1 Manchester City.
Okay,
yeah.
I like it.
I think Arsenal will cause us some problems going forward, but yeah. I think as we've seen this season, the longer the game goes on, the more chances we'll create, and I see a quite comfortable 3-1 victory for us.
Nice one. Paul Serres?
I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw after 90 minutes.
Ooh.
And then with Aguero scoring a Dickov-esque equaliser in injury time.
Yeah, I'll take that, because that just means me spending longer in New York.
And then I think City to go on and nick it in extra time, maybe
extra
with
time.
A Yaya Toure goal, which I think would be really fitting for Yaya. He's a big fan of Wembley. I think, you know, from purely a nostalgic, emotional point of view, it's been sad to see him used so infrequently this season, I think.
Yes.
And it's not the kind of goodbye that I wanted for Yaya, to be honest. I think that he needs to be spoken about in the same way that we speak about David Silva and Sergio Aguero, and how we will
absolutely.
Speak in the future
absolutely.
About Kevin De Bruyne.
It's a good point. He's almost been a little bit forgotten in that sense, in terms of just the absolute influence he has had.
Oh, massive.
You know,
he's just a sensational footballer, just in every regard, you know. And some of the best moments of my City following life have been courtesy of Mr. Yaya Toure. So he'll always
influenced.
Yeah, of course. Of course. He'll always be, you know, he'll always
Toure,
be you know, one of my favourites, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it'd be great to see him come off the bench and nick a winner and continue to enjoy Wembley.
Okay, so a 3-1 from Paul Dickov, a 2-2 at full time from Paul Serres, with a Dickov-inspired winner in extra time. Excellent.
Well, I'll take that.
Yes. I think I'm going to go for 3-2. I think I'm going to go 3-2s, which is kind of a mix of what you've both said, but
yeah.
I've just seen it there. I think it's going to be very open. I think it's going to be goals. I think it's going to be very entertaining. And yeah, but I'm going to go for a 3-2 City win. All right, well, listen, we will see what happens. Okay, that is us in terms of football. I've just got one other point. I think I might have found somewhere, guys, for our recording sessions, our pod recording sessions. apparently Pep's opening a new restaurant in Keene Street, Manchester. Latest word on the street with a Catalan chef who's only got 5 Michelin stars.
Just the five.
that's way too posh
for me.
I was thinking, actually, I wonder, could we get your Pinot Noir? But you might have to settle for some top of the range Rioja.
I can suck that up. Trust me.
Well, you know, Paul, you say that, but across the north of Spain, they have this incredible thing called morcilla, which is essentially black pudding. So, you know, black pudding being absolutely very popular in Scotland. There may not be. It may not be out of your.
There we go.
It's sold for me. Black pudding and a glass of Rioja. Cannot get any better.
Sounds perfect. But yes, that's the latest word in the street. So we'll see what happens with that. I think he's going into maybe some business with some others in the restaurant.
Let's hope that it's an enormous success and he opens a whole chain across the northwest of England and it forces him to stay in Manchester for at least 15 or 20 years.
This is it. And exactly what I was thinking, you know, is this a sign that perhaps, you know, he could be here for a while? Well, let's hope so. But okay, guys, listen, thanks a million. Exactly 1 hour, would you believe, of discussion around the past few games and around Wembley. Hope everybody enjoys the game against Arsenal on Sunday. Let's hope we have some silverware in the cabinet come next week. And we shall see you then.